Welcome to Teachings in the Air. Podcast with Jerry Oldman, coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit, because that's what health means. Teachings in the Air was Jerry Oldman coming to you from beautiful Manitoba, dead center of the North American continent in Brandon, Manitoba. So this is part of the series called Indigenous Is, and this podcast is titled Healing for the Family. You know, the Indigenous Is series of my podcasts are about us asking our ancestors for help, turning back to our ways of healing, of parenting, of gathering food, of music. You know, when I think of what happened, you know, we all know the word colonization and residential school and the 60s scoop and racism, you know, those words that are constantly in the air now. And I think of the impacts of that it had on me, my family, my community. And I know there have been many. You know, we have broad-based problems as Indigenous people. You know, I started doing the podcasts, and it was all about health and wellness. And health is about having a strong mind, a strong body, and a strong spirit. I was wondering what to call this podcast. And at the Sweat Lodge this morning, the message came for me was call it Healing for the Family. And I've heard that in my mind. I said, that's it. That's a wonderful message. Healing for the family. Because when I started to heal, it was about Jerry. You know, it took me a long time to understand that I belong to a circle. Father, mother, siblings, uncles, aunties, cousins. When I finally did feel it, it felt so good. Because I'm not alone. So I started calling all my young relatives, Stephen, or nephew and niece. The adults, I call them cousin, or brother, or sister. So I started going home. And in order for me to do that, I have to heal. My healing journey was a blessing. Because I know there are many methods. In the 70s, they were using, I was addicted. They were using alcohol. I mean, I was using alcohol and drugs. And the treatment at that time was Alcoholics Anonymous and Religion. Then I found out culture is too. Culture is healing. You know, it's such a... And it's free, basically. Just talk to an elder. Bring a gift to an elder or someone doing ceremonies and they'll help you. So that's what the podcast is about today. About healing for the family. I was happy when that message came to me. Because I feel that when we start spreading the word, people will understand I'm responsible for myself. And when I'm responsible for myself, my family is going to benefit. The children are going to benefit. I've seen so many sad children in my working experience. I've seen children's eyes go change when they see their mom or dad intoxicated. I've seen the pain and suffering. And that's why I stay in the field I'm in. To do my best to work with the people. To be with the people. So years ago I met this wonderful person. And addressing one of our social problems that was everyone is struggling with and still struggles with today. And somehow I got asked to work with this group that was doing, I was told by my friend, he's actually my adopted son, Aaron Nelson Moody. And I said, Denise Findlay got a hold of me and wants to help out at one of your workshops. I said, I think it's called Crabs in a Bucket. And he says, yeah, he says, it's really cool. You know, and he says, you know how it is with indigenous people. One of us almost makes it and the rest of the people pull us back down. And I said, yes, I know that. That's a good name, Crabs in a Bucket. One crab's going to get free, the other one's pulling back. You know, I felt that myself. You know, I remember when I quit drinking, people were trying to force me to drink. I was a crab trying to get out of the bucket. So I went to work with Denise Findlay. Such a wonderful workshop. Elders there. You know, so I was thinking about this project Indigenous is an area around family and youth. So I linked in with Denise. And she's my guest today, along with Marla. And I've been to one of their debrief sessions. And I'm saying to myself, what a gift for families to have these two life givers contributing to the healing movement, because that's what we're on, the healing movement. We're going home. We're going to be healthy. We're going to be strong in mind, body, and spirit. Many are already, but we're going to attract many more to it. And we're going to prevent suffering by helping the families. So I'd just like my guests to introduce themselves, a little bit about their life history, and I'm really curious, why do you do this work? And first off, I'm going to ask Denise to introduce herself first and introduce the program that you're working. Then tell us why are you doing this, Denise?
Thank you, Jerry. It's so just, I get mesmerized every time I listen to you, get lulled into a nice, calm, relaxed state. But I guess that's good, because my elders have always taught me, you always speak from the heart. Don't pre-plan what you have to say. And you always get me into that space, which I love so much. Hot Squall, Quinn's now Denise. My name is Denise Finley. I am what you call a two-eyed seer. I belong to the Squamish Nation, where I have the privilege of living and raising my children. And I'm neighbors with Splash, Aaron Nelson Moody. Him and his wife are very good friends of mine. And I've learned so much from him over the years. And I know that some of those teachings, many of those teachings, are Jerry's teachings trickling down through that intergenerational relationship that I've received the benefit of. And it's my pleasure to be here today, to just be given the opportunity to sit with you, Jerry, and Marla, and to be able to speak to something that's very near and dear to my heart. You know, way back when I started working in our communities and traveling throughout BC and other parts of Canada, you know, when you're younger and you think you have the answers to things, right? You think you have the answers. And over the years, as I've grown, I've learned, of course, and my opinions about things have changed, and they're always changing because we never stop learning. But I realized in my own journey as a parent, and looking at my own childhood, which was fraught with much disruption. I had a childhood and a young adolescent. The ground shifted beneath me many, many times in my life. I couldn't find stability, and that was very difficult for me. And I suffered very much as a result of that. And so as a parent of my own two children and working in my own community with families at a very grassroots level, I realized this is what we need in order to heal, that we've experienced what I call, and I'm kind of a radical, I like to get right to the root of things now. I don't like to stay up in the complex. I just like to get right down to the root of what's going on. And I've spent so many hours thinking about this, dreaming about this. This is the thing that's kept me up at night, trying to figure out, you know, at a very root level, what is it when we talk about the impacts of colonization historically, but also today, the psychological stress that imposes upon us as Indigenous people, the stress that I have felt and the inner conflict that I have felt being from two different cultures and not feeling like I could fit here and not feeling like I could fit here and feeling very misunderstood most of my life. It's a profound kind of a stress. And I'm finding now, of course, after all these years coming full circle, that it's been this wound that's occurred as a result of this rupture. You know, colonization caused this very core, what I call a rupture, a soul wound, a rupture from a way of life, from a worldview, from a way of seeing the world, as a whole, interconnected, being part of something much bigger than us, a separation and a rupture from nature, a separation and a rupture from each other. And I still see that today in how we teach our children, how we are raising our children. It's very separation-based, so we're always extracting each other. And you see this in our communities, too, that there's, you know, the nuclear family and people are huddled away in their homes. And, I mean, I have, don't get me wrong, I love living in my community. There's a sense of warmth despite the problems. There's a sense of security and safety and being part of despite all of the challenges and problems. But there's people I've lived next to for 15 years that have never said a word to me. And what does that tell you? That there's people are still in a survival mode in many cases. And so many of our parents are parenting from a survival mindset. And that's not a conscious choice. That is the instinct to survive and to protect oneself. And as a result, there's this rupturing between families, amongst families, between nations in some cases. And we've got this colonial mindset that's been insidiously embedded into us, that for some of us we have these blind spots that we're trying to fix the problem, yet we're still coming at it from that separation-based, aggressor type kind of frame of mind. And so for me, I've kind of come full circle, and I thought, you know, we don't talk about love enough in our families. We don't talk about togetherness, warmth, just resting in each other's care. We're all trying to solve the problem, and we're looking to outside experts, and it's not making things better. Our children need their parents. They need their aunties, their uncles. They need their grandparents. We need to be together again. And how do we do that when we have so many people that are fighting in that fight mode and afraid? And so that's really, I think, the underlying philosophy of our program, Gathering Our Medicine, is that we're endeavoring to shift people's perspective back to being community-centered, child-centered, family-centered, and that we actually, our children need us, not experts, not medical experts, not mental health experts, but they need us more than anything. And that in deciding to be that for our children, we heal too. Those relationships, those connections nurture us. And there's all kinds of brain science around this now, and which, isn't it crazy that science is now just repeating what we've always known? They're just saying, oh, look what we've discovered, but yeah, we always knew this. So I think that's always kind of interesting to go, okay, so let's use that science to say, see, we knew our ancestral wisdom, that ancestral memory that's deep within all of us, knows these things already.
If we understand, we can take action. We have to understand first. And I understood you. You're bringing understanding, contributing to understanding. So thank you. So Marla, can we have you introduce yourself to the Teachings in the Air listenership?
Thank you, Jerry. And thank you for the space and so generously inviting us into your space here. Good morning to all. My name is Marla Klein Kalamea. I'm just a few hours north of you, where you are in Brandon, Jerry, and I'm in the northern interlake of Manitoba. And I'm just listening to you and Denise and been thinking a lot the last couple of days, knowing that we're going to have this conversation about the question of what brought me here and what led me here. And it's a big question, but you've both already distilled it down in what you've shared this morning. And it's that seeking understanding. And my background is in counseling, and I began my career working with victims of domestic violence, and in a very circuitous route eventually found myself to working as a counselor in the school system with children and adolescents. And I think I'm not alone in being in a helping profession full of people with big hearts yearning to be of service and going forth without a lot of understanding of how to do so. And I would say that's very much the place that I came from. I'm a Métis woman. I was not raised in my culture and experienced a lot of grief at this time in my life for what I missed out on and what the other families that I have shared these conversations with, what we've missed out on and not being raised in our culture. And I'm finding that as I continue to yearn to be of service and have a lot of insights that I didn't have when I began my career, that being of service means restoring care back to families and to communities. And it's not coming in as a helper with a role and a title. That is not a context that is helpful at all. Even if your heart is big and your yearning is big to serve in that way, it's not a helper that helps. It's being in community. It's being in relationship. That is what is helpful to our families. And that is an interesting tension, because a lot of the models that we're still working in today in the helping professions are the outside coming in and being the answer. But I find, and I absolutely found when I was working in those types of models, that more often than not, I got in the way of healing. I wasn't helping healing. I was getting in the way of it.
Yes, Denise, I'd just like to ask you, what in your view is missing for families now?
Well, I think it goes back to what I was touching on a little bit in my introduction, and Marla touched on it as well. It's, you know, part of the cascading impacts of this colonial, what I call this colonial system of thought that we've all been conditioned by. I mean, it's inescapable because it's, you know, with globalization, it's everywhere, this way of seeing the world, this way of thinking. It's very work-oriented and it's very economically driven. And in order to earn money and be part of that economic system, we have to leave each other. And so we are not living in togetherness in the way we used to. And this work mode and the stress of that has taken over our lives. And so it's hard to shift for many of us into, and it happens so spontaneously. It's only natural that we, and if you think about the way we lived in the long ago, there was a time for our work, but even our work was done in togetherness. One of my elders said to me, you know, in the long ago, Denise, we didn't work for money, we work to live. And so even the work was done in togetherness. Now, you know, we're in pursuit of the material goods, we're in pursuit of, you know, getting the money to survive. And that requires us to be competitive with each other, to not be available to one another. And it makes it very difficult to just shift into what we call a rest mode and simply be in togetherness and enjoy one another and the medicine that comes. Even, I'll just distill it right down to an essence. If you think about the family meal time ritual of sitting around, and now with COVID, of course, it's pushed us even further apart, and that's why people are suffering so badly with stress and there's escalation in depression and anxiety and mental health problems. But even if you think about the family meal, you know, coming together to not only enjoy someone cooking and caring for us and providing sustenance to us, but to nurture each other's spirits through laughter, eye contact, feeling a sense of belonging, and all of the warmth that comes when we come together in this way. Even something as simple as that is missing now because of busyness, because of stress, and because of all of the other things that come from that place, addictions, being distracted, our technology. And so how do we, you know, our people are so busy looking for answers to all of the problems, but I often, we have so many blind spots about what's right in front of our noses. That our people are right there, our children are right there, you know, our culture is there anytime we want it. We have beautiful people willing to share and teach and lead. If we would just, you know, I think that the technology is such a wonderful symbol for what's going on. If we would just look up and see what's around us again and be receptive to that. that would nurture our spirit and provide the sense of resilience we need, to continue to carry on and to heal.
Yes, you know that. That's clear. You make it clear, Denise, because I agree with you that, you know, that warmth when you're together, really together. Because there are times that I was in a room with my family, especially when I come back from residential school. It's just like there's a magic wall there. Now I'm an individual. And I look at my granny, she didn't change really. It was me that changed, became an individual. And my granny was all about family. And all of a sudden there she sees her grandson and, you know, and others that just seem to care about themselves or be depressed about themselves, you know, those range of emotions, that spectrum that we all live. You know, so what you're saying is just to find that glue that'll bind the family together again. So what's going on for you, Marla, when you listen to this? What's missing?
I'm thinking, Jerry, so much about the parents. When I think about what's missing, I think about all of the young parents that I've worked with who come seeking answers, often for young adolescents, for youth in their, you know, early teenage years, and that very vulnerable, tender time of life, that transitional time of life. And it's very natural that kids that age become very stirred up. There's a lot happening for them. And working as a counselor in the schools, I found that parents would often come to me very concerned about their kids, and really so entrenched we are in this Western medical model of health that can be very misleading, that parents would come to me quite concerned about what was happening to their kids and quite convinced that something was deeply wrong. And things were not deeply wrong at all. Things were unfolding exactly as they needed to for their kids, but we've lost all of our teachings around what it means to be emotionally healthy. And it just the idea of going to professionals to get answers for our kids when the understandings are with the Mushums and Kukums, the aunties, the uncles, in the village, that's where the answers all lie. But we're in this tense place of feeling like we're not parenting in the way that our kids need if we don't get them into counseling. But that's not the context that ever was a natural context for healing.
Yes. You know, we're sort of drifting into the Judeo-Christian, you know, European ways. And, you know, there's good things there. I'm not dissing it. You know, I've gone to deal with my post-trauma stress disorder. I went to a clinician and went through EMDR. And it's like a no-talk therapy, and it was very good. It was very efficient. It worked. Because all I'd say to myself, you know, I want to stop being negative about Jerry. And it wouldn't stop even when I say, stop that, you know, talking to myself, you know. You're a good man, Jerry. And then something in the back of my mind, no, you're not. You know, so I'm not dissing, you know, the counseling therapeutic models. But I've asked myself, why aren't we taking advantage of it when it's there? What's the stigma? Because the word stigma means a stain. What's the stigma about going for help? Because people don't want to say, I have mental health issues. because people can say, you're crazy, you're nuts, you know. And I grew up, and that as a child, hearing that, you know, nobody wanted to talk about